Hi, everyone. Emma and I are continuing to take turns featuring the anti-racism resources that we are engaging with each month because we believe that education leads to open hearts and free voices that are empowered to speak up and fight for change. Our hope is that you will find these resources useful for your education and that they will also help you to cross the threshold into doing active anti-racism work so that we can create an equitable world together. We love you all. Black Lives Matter. In honor of the Juneteenth holiday this month, I invite you to learn more about the background and the importance of this moment in history that this day marks. Juneteenth is a celebration of freedom and the commemoration of the end of slavery in the United States, the day that all Americans were free. Although the Emancipation Proclamation was signed in January of 1863, it wasn't until more than 2 years later that the remaining 250,000 enslaved people in Texas learned on June 19, 1865, that they were free. And it wasn't until this year, 2021, that Juneteenth is finally and rightfully proclaimed a federal holiday by President Biden through the signing of the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act. In the show notes, I've linked to 4 articles where you can learn more about Juneteenth. The first link is actually a transcript of President Biden on the day he signed the act, entitled "A Proclamation of Juneteenth Day and Observance 2021. You will also find an article entitled "Why Celebrating Juneteenth is More Important Now Than Ever, It's Time for America to Truly Grapple with Its Legacy of Slavery" by P.R. Lockhart, "The Story of Juneteenth" by James Harrington, and "The Historical Legacy of Juneteenth" by the National Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture. Emma and I both wish you a very happy belated Juneteenth.
Welcome to the
Full Heart,
Free Voice
Podcast.
I'm Emma Veritas. I'm a writer and writing coach for women who want to start writing. And I'm a teacher for women who want to find their true selves again.
And I'm Caitlin Bosshart, a life coach for the multi-passionate at heart and wedding coach for couples planning non-traditional weddings. We read books that inspire you to live with a full heart
and a free voice. Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, we have a fun announcement for you. So Caitlin and I have recently opened up our affiliate shop. Our affiliate shop is a library of resources by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and you can find it at wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop. And when you go there, you'll find a list of links to Women Who Run With the Wolves, but also to all of Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes that she's done through Sounds True. And when you buy these through these links, you support Clarissa Pinkola Estes, you support Sounds True, which is a very cool independent publisher, and you support our podcast because Sounds True has a very generous and amazing affiliate percentage that they give to us whenever you buy something. So it's this beautiful win-win-win, and it's also an opportunity for you to dive deeper into these educational resources. And so I just wanted to ask Caitlin today, Caitlin, what is one thing you have loved about listening to Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes?
Well, I think it's, you know, when we are diving in so intimately with her work, and in a way it's like, I don't know about you, but there's been times I'm like, oh, it's Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Like there's a little bit of this, like, I don't know, she's like ethereal, I think in some ways in my mind and in this, but you know, there was something that was so nice is, you know, when I listen to her audios, I get to hear her voice and I get, there's like a sense of her heart and her intention that comes through in a way that, you know, now that I've listened to her voice and how she tells these stories, when I'm reading, I hear her, I hear like her tone and how she kind of explains things. And it gives me a different level of understanding, I think, of the way that she is expressing her her ideas and her thoughts and her wisdom. And so that's been one of the coolest things, that it's just like another level of kind of getting to know this author that we are engaging with so intimately and learning from.
And there's a class I want to tell you about today called The Power of the Crone. Entering the terrain of wisdom occurs at any age. We sometimes step, sometimes stumble, and other times are pulled into the territory of the crone, when the need for a deeper, larger understanding of our most meaningful paths in life can no longer be denied, and when the gifts that are hidden in our challenges must be brought forth. On The Power of the Crone, Dr. Estes presents Volume 2 of The Dangerous Old Woman, with 6 sessions of original stories, psychological commentary, and blessings. We invite you to go to wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop and click on our special link to purchase this class. Welcome to our book club study of Women Who Run With the Wolves, where we are talking about Chapter 14, La Selva Subterranea, Initiation in the Underground Forest. This chapter is an exploration of the entire life process of claiming your wild self through a descent into the underworld, which is the deep realm of the psyche within us. This chapter is for you if you would love to understand more about this journey of claiming your wild self and also locate yourself in it, seeing where you have been, where you are now, and where you are going. It's for you if you need encouragement to keep going, to keep seeking healing and seeking your true self. And it's also for you if you want to be emboldened by the endurance of the wild self, who can go on the long healing journeys and come through the other side. In the chapter, Dr. Estes gives us the teaching story of the Handless Maiden, which she says offers material for a woman's entire life process and deals with most of the key journeys of a woman's psyche. The Handless Maiden is actually a pretty long story, and so I'm going to tell you a synopsis of the story today. And as with many old fairy tales, there are a couple moments of violence in the story. So if you want to skip the reading, you can always move ahead a few minutes after this music stops. And remember, we will absolutely be reading this through a metaphorical lens. In the tale of the Handless Maiden that Dr. Estes offers us, the story begins with a miller who has a mill that is no longer working. He has a wife and a daughter, but no financial wealth. One day, a man walks up to the miller and offers him all the riches in the world if the miller will just give him what is standing behind the old mill. And the miller agrees, believing the only thing behind the mill is an apple tree. As he walks home, his wife runs out to him, with all her clothes turning to the richest fabrics, wondering what has happened, since all their furniture has suddenly become the grandest and best. The miller tells her what happened, and the wife cries out that their daughter is standing behind the mill sweeping, and the man was really the devil. And so 3 years later, the devil comes back to get the daughter. To prepare herself, she bathes, dresses in white, and draws a circle around herself. When the devil approaches, he is thrown back. He can't touch her while she is clean and in the circle. He demands she not wash herself and says he will come back to get her later. The girl does not bathe. And it is not until many months later that the devil comes again. This time, when he tries to retrieve her, she begins crying. She cries so much it washes the dirt off her arms and hands, and once again the devil cannot touch her. And so now he demands the miller cut off her hands. The miller is appalled, finally realizing just how horrible this devil is, but he does it anyway, because the devil threatens to destroy all the lands surrounding the miller's home. Once again, the devil comes to retrieve the girl, but she cries
tears that run all the way down her arms, which are now handless. And once again, the devil cannot get her, and he has to give up after this third try, losing all claim to her. And now the handless maiden, no longer feeling like she belongs in the house of her father, goes out into the world. She wanders until, very hungry, she comes upon an orchard surrounded by a moat, where a kind spirit lets her in. She walks up to a pear tree, whose branch comes down to meet her, and she reaches up with her mouth and eats the pear. The gardener watches as this happens, and believing her to be a spirit, he brings the king the next night to watch. The handless maiden once again eats a pear accompanied by the spirit, and the king, seeing this, rushes out to greet the maiden, and overwhelmed, asks her to marry him. She does this, and the king makes silver hands for the maiden to wear. After some time goes by, the king goes off to war while the maiden is pregnant, and she has the baby while he is gone. The king's mother sends a messenger to let the king know, but along the way, the messenger falls asleep, and the devil comes by and changes the message. So the messenger tells the king something has gone wrong when everything is actually okay at home. The king sends a tender message of comfort back, but once again the devil changes the words, so a cruel message comes back to the king's mother. Over and over again this happens, with misunderstanding after misunderstanding, until finally the king's mother sends the queen and her baby away for their own safety. The queen wanders the woods until she finds a home of caring women who take her and her child in. She does well in this home, and over a period of 7 years, her hands grow back. When the king returns from war, the misunderstanding is revealed, and he vows to look for his wife without eating or sleeping. He wanders for 7 years, searching for her, while something greater than him sustains him. One day, he comes upon the house where the queen is living. He falls asleep there, but when he wakes up, a woman and child are standing over him, and she tells him she is his wife, showing him the silver hands he had made for her. The king rises up and hugs them both, and everyone in the house celebrates with a beautiful feast now that the king and queen are reunited. Dr. Estes explains that we can read this story, seeing each character represent a part of one person's psyche, and that this story touches on all the key points of a journey where you claim your wild self. Dr. Estes says there are 7 stages of this journey. First, there is the bargain without knowing, when the miller makes a bargain for riches, not knowing what he's going to lose. Second, there is the dismemberment, when the maiden loses her hands, but this also initiates her leaving home and going on her journey. Third, there is the wandering, when she wanders until finally reaching the orchard. Fourth, there is finding love in the underworld, when the maiden marries the king. Fifth, there is the harrowing of the soul, when there are misunderstandings and troubles and messages going awry while the king is away. Sixth, there is the realm of the wild woman, when the handless maiden finds her way to the house of healing and her hands grow back. And seventh, there is the wild bride and bridegroom, when the king must go on his own journey through the wilderness to reunite with his bride as equals. So this chapter is the longest one in Woman Who Run With the Wolves. It's almost 70 pages long, and there is a lot to cover for each of these stages. And so we're going to do things a little bit different for this chapter. So instead of doing a book club episode and a life school episode separately, we're actually going to merge the two kinds of episodes, and we're going to do like a mini study of each of these stages. So for each stage, we're going to tell you stories that we've been going through. We're going to share a quote or two for each stage, and we're also going to offer you questions that you can ask yourself to really help you kind of locate yourself in this story. And we'll be doing this over the next two episodes. So this is part one, where we'll do stages 1 through 3. And in the next episode, we'll do stages 4 through 7. And what I think is really interesting about this chapter is that, you know, the real power here is in seeing where these stages have been active for you in your life and learning how to appreciate the journey you've been on and also knowing the rewards of keeping going. And I really love this quote that Dr. Estes offers us about what is on hand for us as we learn about the handless maiden. She says, "The handless maiden is about woman's initiation into the underground forest through the rite of endurance. The word endurance sounds as though it means to continue without cessation. And while this is an occasional part of the tasks underlying the tale, the word endurance also means to harden, to make sturdy, to make robust, to strengthen. And this is the principal thrust of this tale and the generative feature of a woman's long psychic life. We don't just go on to go on. Endurance means we are making something." And I love this quote because I think it really helps us see that we're making a life for ourselves, right? As we go on this journey, that there's purpose to it, that we go on because we're making this wild, beautiful, interesting life that we're all learning how to live. Okay, so hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Emma.
This is a long chapter.
This is. It's a lot to chew through.
Yeah, but we're almost done because after this chapter, there's only one more chapter in Women Who Run With the Wolves.
I can't even believe it. It's so wild.
Yeah, so this has been an active endurance. Our study of Women Who Run With the Wolves.
Yes, it really, I hadn't really thought of it in that term, but as soon as you said that, I was like, yes, that is 100% what this is. And I think that's why it's so challenging and so common for so many people to say, I started it like myself mm-hmm. and then put it down because mm-hmm. it is so much. And this kind of feeds right into that first stage. Sometimes it's like, man, is there an easier way to do this, baby? Kind of searching for that. I know I definitely fall prey to that, I don't know, that desire.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about stage one, the bargain without knowing. And so you have a story for us today to help us understand what this bargain without knowing is.
So the thing that was like really interesting about going through this chapter for me is the fact that, you know, this, I don't actually have one neat and tidy story around this because I feel like this bargain without knowing is something that I have gone through multiple times in my life. And there have always been these points of, you know, thinking back to our last chapter on shame that I'm like, why haven't I fully learn this lesson that I never fall prey to, you know, this poor bargain for myself. But what I really loved about this chapter is that how she really talks about that this initiation that happens, it's like that we have these, you know, psychic springs and psychic winters. And so each time that we kind of go through this cycle, we learn something else about ourselves. And so that's really what I've been chewing on for the last couple of days as we've been preparing to really, you know, dive into this chapter, into this stage in particular. And for me, throughout my entire life, the poor bargain that I have definitely made is ignoring my intuition, especially when it comes to relationships, whether it's friendships, romantic relationships, over and over and over. And I would find that, you know, I would mold myself in so many ways to fit others, to find a sense of belonging, but at the detriment, you know, to myself and my own, you know, truest expression. And, you know, there were times that it kind of worked, that it is sort of, there's something that felt good, you know, until it didn't. And there have just been points in my life where there were relationships where You know, I no longer felt like I could be my true self because I had just, you know, molded to fit, you know, in so many different ways. And what that often led to, you know, I can think of times in elementary school, times in middle school, you know, in high school, college, you know, and really on, that anytime that I've done that, it has led to some major either betrayal or heartbreak. And, you know, I can think of how, you know, ignoring that intuition. So I'll give one specific story, how when I was in college, I moved into the dorms with a group of girls that I didn't know. We all became friends. We spent a lot of time together. And even though there were a lot of, you know, these tugs at me that like something was off about these relationships. I think we've talked about it in past episodes where it was sort of like that, some of that toxic energy. There was weird comparing and, you know, an inability to actually truly connect in a meaningful way because of there's just some societal, you know, ways that, you know, women kind of like pit themselves against each other and just ways it just felt so heartbreaking for me. And at the end of my freshman year, I decided to move into a house off campus with this group of women, and the whole thing just like imploded. It was just like the most awful living situation I think I've ever, well, actually not the worst, the second worst living situation I'd ever been in. And I remember just going back and thinking back to, I actually can remember where I was sitting in my college dorm cafeteria thinking like, I think this is a bad idea to move in with these girls. And I ignored it because like they were the closest friends that I had made since I went to college. And I was afraid like what's going to happen? Where am I going to live if I don't, you know, if I don't decide to move in with them? But going through that was like, oh yeah, like I knew then. And so that's kind of where that, you know, that inner knowing kind of comes up and it's like, oh yeah, I can trust my intuition. And that has happened to me over and over and over, you know, and I've learned every single time that this, something like this has happened to me. It's like, oh yeah, that's just a reminder that of how much I can trust myself.
So I think this is a great example. I think relationship is a great example of the bargain without knowing, because I think what's interesting in the story is that the miller doesn't know that his daughter is behind the mill, that like if he makes this bargain, he's going to lose his daughter. Like he doesn't decide that or think that or know that. So he jumps for the riches, even without going behind the mill to see what's standing there, just to double check, you know, to see.
Right, right.
And oh, I think it's a really interesting part of the story because it reminds me a lot of youth. And, you know, whatever age we're at, we can have this part of us that is still young that will kind of do that, right? We'll go for a thing that seems like it's going to bring riches. And to me, what it sounds like in your story is that the riches were belonging. Like you like leapt at, you know, the riches of, hey, you're going to get a sense of belonging if you do this. And when you did it, you didn't realize you were going to lose, you know, your sense of your intuition or your connection to yourself or your boundaries. You know, tell me where I'm wrong. Like, so what did you not know you were going to lose? That's my question.
That's a really good question. You know, I think it's like, even though there were those, there was that little tug. Yeah, I didn't know what the loss was going to be. I didn't know that I was going to lose a sense of like safety in the home that I was living in and comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I would have to dull myself down to not be a target mm-hmm. to this group of women. I mm-hmm. didn't know that ultimately, you know, even though I was trying to mold myself to be part of this these relationships and have these connections with these women, the relationship fell apart anyway. Like it honestly didn't matter what I did, probably. It just was like it was just going to devolve,
right?
Really, no matter what, out of my control. I didn't know that part. Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting to me of just that idea of double checking, or that idea of kind of asking yourself, like, when you're making a decision like that, and you're like, ooh, I might get all this awesome stuff if I do it, to before jumping in, to really just stop and ask yourself, like, is it really only an apple tree that I'm going to lose? And why is it okay for me to lose an apple tree? And like to just do that stopping and really double checking on, yeah, I could get this, but what could I lose? I think that's such a good question to ask yourself.
And I also think that, you know, kind of thinking about another reflection question is, you know, each time that something like this has happened for me, it's kind of like the question that she poses in here, like, what can I make of this now? Like, mm-hmm. what's the wisdom that I can glean from this particular situation that can build up my strength and help me understand myself better? And like, what are my needs and what do I want? I mean, I know that especially when it's come to relationships of any kind, really, that have, you know, fallen apart for one reason or another, or that I've realized that just it's something wasn't right for me. Like, I made that poor bargain. It just makes it all the more clear what I actually do want. And I know that that's for me, for sure. Like, sometimes it's so much easier to say, I know I don't want these things. And then it can, once you identify that, it makes it so much clearer. It's like, okay, now this is like, I feel so, like, this sense of resolve around, like, this is what I want in my life, in the relationships that I have. And, you know, after that has happened, I mean, yes, there have been maybe some smaller circumstances, you know, since that experience. But I know for me at that point in time, I am so thoughtful about the relationships that I foster. And when I did become really clear about what I wanted and how I wanted to be treated, like, people in my life, I mean, it was just like, it was almost like this beautiful door opened and in walked the most incredible people in my life, you know? And that's like really truly been the gift of like going through this initiation, like, over and over and over. It's like, right, almost like preparing this beautiful, like, space for all the wonderful support that I have in my life.
Yeah. So it's like, yes, you know, we all do the bargain without knowing. So I like the idea that, you know, she says these are the key parts of this journey. So we can assume we all have this in common, that we've all made these bargains without knowing. We've all, you know, gone for maybe literally the wealth without knowing what we'd lose, or wealth in some other way. And, you know, an abundance of belonging, an abundance of maybe intellect, right? Like, academia is one of those big things. You make a bargain without knowing, and you lose something that you didn't expect to lose. And I do think this is, it's really good to remember that we all do it. And then because we do it, if we can learn from it, then we gain something. We gain, like what she says, we initiate this journey into the underground forest, which actually kind of brings us to stage two. But before we wrap up stage one, I was wondering if you'd like to share a quote from this one that stood out for you.
Okay, so the quote I want to share is, "The making of this awful bargain is a matter of enormous and meaningful paradox. Even though choosing poorly could be seen as a pathologically self-destructive act, it far more often turns into a watershed event that brings vast opportunity to redevelop the power of instinctive nature. In this respect, there is loss and sadness. The poor bargain, like birth and death, constitutes a rather utilitarian step off the cliff planned by the self in order to bring a woman deep into her wildness." The thing I love about this quote is really that this is how we, I think, we develop our intuition. Mm-hmm. Like we step off the cliff and we're like, oh, that's what intuition is. You know, it's like that. It gives us this opportunity to really reflect and understand how our intuition communicates to us. It has, I mean, every time it has helped me trust my intuition so much more. And when I've really have been able to move past the, you know, like feeling like, oh, like beating myself up, like, why did I let this happen again? It's like, there is so much like opportunity for, to be, you know, gained, so much to be gained from that.
Right. It's like, okay, like time to go deeper into the forest. Learn exactly. Some more. Oh, that's amazing. I love that. And just to wrap up too, so the reflection questions to think about with this, which you've already talked about, are like if you're about to make a decision before diving headfirst, really give yourself an honest check. Ask yourself, what could I lose? You know, and is it worth it, right? Is this a bargain I really want to make? And then also if you're looking back at times in your life when you've done this, ask yourself what you gained. What, you know, what came out of this? How have I changed and grown?
Okay, so as those of you have been following along with us know, we started this new awesome segment where we just share a little bit about what is going on with us. As you all know, we do a lot more outside of this podcast, and we just want to share, you know, all the cool things that we're doing. So let's start with you today, Emma.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited because when this episode releases, I will be offering my summer solstice oracle card readings, which our listeners know I do special oracle card readings on the solstices and equinoxes every year. And what this is when you sign up and get it, you get basically a sacred ceremony that I do on your behalf, and I pull a couple oracle cards for you, and I write out this beautiful intuitive reading that you will receive as a PDF in your email. And the idea of this is to stop and check in with the seasons, which I think is such a wonderful practice to do, to just throughout the year, not just on New Year's, but every, you know, little while throughout the year, to just set an intention and ask yourself, okay, the season is changing. Life is changing. Things feel different. Things feel so different in the summer than they do in the winter. So asking yourself, what do I want now? What's next for me? And the idea of these oracle card readings is that I will do this intuitive reading on your behalf to help you really see what's next for you. What kind of intention do you want to set? Where do you want to go for the summer cycle of the year? And the oracle cards are always really cool. I have a ton of fun decks, and I just pick whichever deck I feel drawn to the most for you. So I have some cool animal decks, some with trees, some with archetypes, others. I love this Threads of Fate oracle I have. So you never know what's going to come out for you with these decks to see what's on hand. So yeah, so that's what I have going on. You can come to my website, wildauthenticity.com, to sign up. And yeah, that's it. It's one of my favorite things I do throughout the year. I'm really excited.
I love that you do these so much, and I really, really highly recommend them. I have been on the receiving end of Emma's oracle card readings, and you know, you've done these for me actually at some really powerful times mm-hmm. in my life. And I still think back to some of those messages. So if you're interested, definitely check these out.
Thank you. Okay. So Caitlin, what do you have going on? What have you been up to?
Oh man, I've been up to a lot of the same thing. So I want to just do some reminders. I was actually thinking, like, really what I've been doing is spending a lot of time in my garden and picking flowers and painting my flowers and, you know, doing fun things like that and making clay earrings. So it's been fun to do some things actually not related to my business lately. It's been really awesome. But I do want to remind everyone of a few things. So one, if you are engaged or know someone who's engaged, I have some spots open for wedding coaching. So whether, you know, someone has a wedding coming up very soon, or if it's a ways in the future, wedding coaching can really come in and really support a couple to create their vision, really feel grounded and be able to, you know, create a vision for their wedding and their wedding ceremony that is really authentic and genuine and really folds in who they are. And it's just one of the most fun things that I get to do. So if you are at all interested, reach out. I do a free discovery session so we can talk about what that looks like and if wedding coaching is a good fit for you. And then, like I've been talking about in the last couple episodes, I started offering an activation session. So it is a single deep dive session that helps multi-passionate creatives understand what your connative style is or how you naturally take action. So if you feel like at any point in the process of working on a, you know, creative project that you get tripped up at all, you feel like you're kind of banging your head against the wall, it might be that you're working against your natural tendencies. And I would really love to help you identify where that might be happening so that you can create a sense of ease and flow. And just, I love these sessions so much because they end up feeling really, really validating for people. I know it's how I felt when I learned more about my connative style. So if you're interested, you can also, there'll be a link in the show notes, but all of this is at caitlinbosshart.com. And of course, if you want to go even deeper, if you have a big passion project that you just need support to really just get going, because like you just feel this deep calling to get this thing created and into the world, I would also love to connect with you and see if a longer term coaching container is a good fit for you and your life at this moment in time. So all of that is available on my website to learn more, or you can connect with me at caitlinbosshart.com. And another thing that I have been working on that I'm really, really excited to share with all of you, because it is actually for you, our listeners, is I have actually created a podcast merchandise shop. And this has just been such a fun and exciting project for me, because I have always had a little bit of a dream of putting a piece of my artwork onto clothing and onto merchandise. And this just seemed like such a cool and awesome opportunity to live out that dream. So if you love the podcast, if you love our name, if you love our podcast art, you can actually now support the podcast and purchase either a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or a mug. And there's bags, there's all sorts of cool things that have our name and our logo on it. And so I hope that you will go and check it out. I've been working really hard to curate these different designs and items for you to purchase. And so the other really exciting thing is if you are interested in checking it out for the next 2 weeks, because it's going to be just launched on the day that this podcast airs, for the next 2 weeks, all of our listeners will actually get an additional 15% off all of their orders. And so now is the perfect time to go check it out, see if you want to purchase anything and support the podcast in that way. So I hope you enjoy it. I would love to hear what you think. If you love the items, if you purchase something, definitely send us a photo and tag us in it. We would just be like over the moon about it. So that is the other thing that I have been working on.
Yay. And I can't wait to wear my Full Heart Free Voice t-shirt and drink out of a Full Heart Free Voice mug. That's going to be so fun.
I know. It's like going to be probably what I'm going to be wearing all day, every day. So it's been very exciting.
Yay.
All right. So moving on to the second stage, the dismemberment. So Emma, I'm wondering if you could share a story from your life of an experience where you had like a dismemberment of some sort that ultimately ended up being like that catalyst journey into that underworld or the La Selva Subterranea.
Yeah. I think I do. You know, honestly, I was reading the chapter, and when I read this part, as to find a story, I was trying to really understand what this kind of dismemberment is, and understanding like kind of the next stage a little bit too, because what she says, I think this is what she says, and tell me if you have a different understanding, Caitlin. So I think what she's saying is it's like something you lose that feels critical to your life. You know, something that like you use every day, something that's just like an integral part of how you go about living, right? Because you're touching things, feeling things, you know, using these hands. And when you lose it, it initiates you to go out on this healing journey. It's like you lose some of your naivete and you go on into your life, but your life becomes more of like a healing journey, kind of deep journey. So I don't know, is that how you understood? Like, it's like this kind of dismemberment that thrusts you into healing.
Yeah, exactly what you're saying makes perfect sense. And I really actually love the way that you describe that, because it helped me actually just in this moment identify a dismemberment for myself. So yes, I think that's exactly what she's saying.
Okay. So if that's what she's saying, then I think kind of my ultimate dismemberment story might actually be sobriety. It might be like when I lost alcohol, which probably, I don't know if you haven't had an experience of addiction, that might kind of sound strange. But, you know, when I was drinking through my 20s, alcohol was how I lived. You know, it's how I dealt with life. It's how I filtered life. You know, I filtered it through a haze of being drunk and hungover and drunk and hungover and drunk and hungover again. And like, you know, I was like more of a person who went out to bars. And so everything in my life was like centered around the bar life and the drinking. And so I literally held it with my hands. You know, it was literally what I would grasp with my hands. And when I got sober and I lost, it really did feel like a deep grief. Like I had lost this thing that helped me to live, you know? And it was really hard to not have that anymore. And also, I absolutely lost a lot of my naivete. I mean, talk about a bargain without knowing. When I took my first drink, I was like, oh, you can feel this way? That's great. Because I just had a bunch of horrible feelings that I hated my whole life. And when I was 17, I drank my first rum and coke, and it felt so damn good. I loved how I felt. I didn't know that you could have an experience of life that was not pain. Like when the pain just numbed, I was like, this is great. This is the solution. What I didn't know about that bargain, because I just dove headfirst into that relationship with alcohol. But I didn't know that actually I was losing my whole self. Like I didn't know that when I numbed the pain, I also numbed possibility of like who I could become above of, you know, being like connected and alive and aware. They say in like 12-step programs, they say that you're basically your maturity stops at whatever age you start your addiction. So when I started drinking at 17, I pretty much stayed 17 for the entirety of my 20s. So I stopped, like, I didn't know I was losing that, like my ability to grow as a person. You know what I mean? Which is what I love the most, is personal development. So then it was like the dismemberment of that, of losing alcohol. It's like I lost some of that naivete and saw like, oh, well, that wasn't a great decision to drink. And like I didn't know that I was going to become addicted to it either. And so the dismemberment felt really horrible and really hard to lose this wonderful thing, but it absolutely initiated this huge life journey that absolutely is a deep psychology, deep psyche, deep healing. Like, cause to, in order to not drink, I then had to like go through this deep healing of why was I in so much pain in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say that's my big dismemberment experience. Mm-hmm. Does that all like ring true and kind of make sense with the story and stuff?
Yeah, it completely rings true. And it also hits really close to home. You know, it's interesting hearing the way that you describe that. And, you know, is not, you know, not having gone through addiction myself, but being close to someone, very close to someone who struggled with it and almost lost their life to it. And like that losing of the way that this person described it was as if like alcohol was the only thing that they ever like could count on. Mm-hmm. And that was like treated as like a best friend. I mean, it was like, and it was such an interesting thing. And so, yeah, like going through that like sense of loss, but then like the sense of loss and how like losing that like opened up a whole world. So everything that you're saying is like making me like emotional hearing you, because it's like, oh yeah, like this is, yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big initiation to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge, huge initiation. And I think it really rings true with the story here, the bargain without knowing, the dismemberment, and even like, you know, as you talk about the wandering, like I can kind of see now, if I think about all seven stages, I can see that whole story there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really interesting. So I'm curious what your dismemberment story was.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's different. And so actually maybe help me process through this a little bit to see if it still fits. But I was thinking of my dismemberment. I mean, it thinks like it's very physical for me, was going through a back surgery. But first it was like wearing like this back brace, and like, it was like this sense of like this huge loss of freedom. And it wasn't something that I didn't choose the back brace, but I did technically choose to go through the back surgery. It was mm-hmm. ultimately my decision. And at 15, it's almost exactly a couple of days ago, I have this 17-year anniversary mm-hmm. of that event. And just thinking about how, you know, losing so much of my mobility actually was, you know, very much went down into the underground. And it's been this constant journey of like healing and self-love and appreciation of my body, even though I sometimes feel at war with it. And right. So yeah, that experience has been a huge catalyst of healing and better understanding myself and honoring myself.
I think that story is really compelling for this dismemberment stage. And my question for you is, what did you feel you lost during this? Or I guess in the story, she's really talking about something being cut off, right? So what is it for you that represented those hands that got cut off when you think about your story of your back surgery?
There's a couple of different ways that my mind goes. I mean, there is obviously the physical like limitation that came with it. But I really think of my experience with scoliosis, like both the back brace and the surgery, as being this kind of like fork in the road for me. And I think it really changed my path in life in so many ways, because I was sort of like cut off from, you know, because I wasn't in a good mental space when I was going through this. I felt I was like cut off from connection. I withdrew a lot. I sort of let go of this. Actually, it makes me think of like this first one of this, you know, this poor bargain almost of like, I sort of let go of some of these relationships that weren't as healthy, and I kind of withdrew a bit. And I was more in this like introspective space, and where I did a lot of observing and became sort of like this outsider, which I think actually relates to number three. But yeah, I like felt cut off from sort of like being in this like easy flow of, just like go along with the flow of what everyone else is doing, and, you know, like happy go lucky, not worry about anything bigger than,
right.
you know, than I think what I normally would have had to deal with had I not gone through this. And then to be cut off from sort of like this simple childhood. I kind of grew up fast in a lot of ways because of it.
Yes, I think that makes sense. It's like the dismemberment somehow cuts us off from our naivete, like whatever that is for us. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Like it's that thing that helps us to mature in some way. And I actually want to read the quote now, if that works.
Yes.
Okay. So Clarissa Pinkola Estes says, "This motif of cutting as initiation is central to our story. If in our modern societies, the hands of the ego must be sundered in order to regain our wild office, our feminine senses, then go they must in order to take us away from all seductions of meaningless things within our reach. Whatever it is that we can hold on to in order not to grow. If it is so that the hands must go for a while, then so be it. Let them go." And I love this because I feel like I can see this, you know, in this, whatever it is that we can hold on to in order not to grow. Like the idea, like you literally hold on to a drink, you know, it's like whatever I was holding on to in order not to grow, I had to be cut off, right? Like I hit a bottom with my alcoholism, and that bottom then led to the cutting off of alcohol from my life, which has been the best thing ever, even though it was really, really hard at the time. But I like this idea, like the hands of the ego. But, you know, because she regrows her hands, she regrows wild hands in the end. So it is also interesting to think, like, what are the hands we're letting go of? Or getting right. What are the hands that are getting cut off now? It's not necessarily the wild hands yet. Like she regrows those hands in the woods, in the forest. So one question, like I think that would be great to ask yourself at this point is, like, if you're looking back at the past, I think that question of, you know, what got cut off that in the end led you to be able to claim yourself? So what has been cut off in your life that specifically that thing being cut off led you on a journey to grow and develop personally, that led you to become more of your true self? You know, even if you don't feel like that journey is complete, like Caitlin is saying, this journey is probably never fully complete. You probably go through all of this in cycles. But is there a something that happened that got cut off that made it so that you then became more of you, more of your true self? What question would you ask, Caitlin?
So my question would be, you know, at that point in time where you lost that sense of naivety, you know, what was it that ultimately, you know, stepped in its place? And what showed up for you? Like, what were your eyes opened up to through this initiation process of losing, you know, that naive view on that part of your life?
Okay, so now it's time for the third stage, which is called the wandering. So this is where the handless maiden now no longer feels belonging in the house of her parents. And so she goes and she wanders and she gets hungry and she finds this orchard and a spirit lets her in past the moat to be able to eat the pear on the fruit tree. And so Caitlin, what do you have to share with us today about the wandering?
Well, it's actually, now that we've been talking a little bit about this story of sort of like the initiation through all my journey with scoliosis, you know, when she talks about how, you know, we choose to no longer be unconscious and, you know, pursue that more conscious union with the deeper wild self. And I think that that actually was like, it truly was like that point in time where I was like, you know, I'm not necessarily like everybody else. And I kind of started to see myself as like a little bit separate. And I was like, okay, like I'm not like everybody else. I see the world in a different way because this thing has kind of like pulled me out of just like the flow, like the social self flow, like being right. in that mode of being like so caught up in culture and what was happening with my peers that I started to be like, well, who am I and what is my purpose and what is life and what, you know, like what does it mean to be like a human and what does it mean to have things happen to us? And, you know, I started to really kind of like look and explore, you know, life, you know, in a different way. So like, that's, I think that's kind of how that sort of continues to connect for me. You know, but when she really talks about kind of like leaving one life for another or having this moment of just like, I have to get out, I have to wander. I definitely have had that where it's like, there's these feelings of like, I need to separate myself from the situation. So it's like, you know, that point in time where I was working at the domestic violence shelter and I was like, I have to get out and I literally need to go across the world to just feel like I can find myself again. Like I needed that sense of wandering or, you know, times where I've like really felt like I need to leave this, like this especially comes up, I think, in romantic relationships. Like I need to leave this relationship because I just have outgrown it in this new life. Like I'm choosing a different life for myself. Absolutely comes up.
I really like that idea of the wandering. Yeah, it starts with, okay, I've lost this thing, you know, this, I've had this thing cut off for me. And now I know it's time to choose a different life. Like I've matured past whatever this is, and I need something new. And I can definitely relate to that. I can see myself doing that a lot of times with like career, with jobs, you know, getting sober is certainly a huge part of that, like moving across the country. I think sometimes it really is you just outgrow or you have an experience of loss that really is like, okay, this, I know too much now to sit and stay in this situation right. or this place. Now I know too much. Like that happens, I think, a lot on this kind of journey where you're more introspective. And so I'm curious. So if you think about like leaving that job and saying, okay, I need a new situation. Do you see the kind of the whole moat, pear, orchard part of the story in that part for you?
I think there's been these, you know, times, I just think about the path that I've sort of chosen where it's kind of like this like rejection sort of this easier life. Like, I mean, I always think about it in terms of career. I'm just feeling like, you know, I don't just want to necessarily work at a 9-to-5 job. And there's nothing, and I want to be so clear, it's not, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that it just didn't feed me. It wasn't right for me. And of feeling like, you know, I just need to do something else. And so there would be, you know, I think about like, you know, like that spirit kind of coming through and like draining the moat. And like, there have been these moments and these confirmations or like these like sort of invisible tugs or where I've ended up in places or like taking the life coach training, like kind of, I mean, all these different things that have kind of like shown up in my life and being like, oh, like something is guiding me and pulling me here and I need to do that. And then it was like each time that I would literally like consume something. Like it almost seems like a, like when it comes to either like life coaching or these different passions, it's like there was like this tug. And then like I literally in the form of, you know, information, like consumed this thing. And then it has become like part of me. So like she kind of talks about like it's these like wild urges. And then we like consume the thing that we then become.
Right.
Is that like too trippy? But like, it's kind of like, okay, I can see how it kind of flows in, you know, in that way.
Yeah. I don't think that's too trippy at all because I mean, if you think about it, like, I don't know, in Susan Hyatt's book, Bear, where she is, you know, disrupting the diet industry, one of the first steps is your environmental diet.
like really looking at what are you taking in, like seeing media as consumption, you know, where you're taking that into you. And so I love this idea of like when you turn to, you know, the fruit tree. So she talks about the fruit tree as like the tree of knowledge, right? The tree of life. And you're consuming what nourishes your wild self, then yeah, then you get to like take part of that into you and you get to then live a different kind of life that feels more nourishing and more wild.
Yeah, beautifully said. And I know that you've had, you know, it's like we have different and yet in ways like parallel journeys. And so I'm curious if this part speaks to you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. I mean, I'm one of those people that like every once in a while burns everything to the ground and does something completely different. And so for me, I think it has been a part of like just outgrowing. Like I grew up in New England. I love New England. But you know, I like established a career there just like you. And I remember actually at one point, like sitting in my cubicle at that office and feeling, I mean, it's a small space, like a cubicle, you know, is a small space, but I remember just feeling so cramped and just like, I am literally too small. Like my energy is so big. Like I can't fit my energy into this space of this computer and this keyboard and this basement office. And so for me, it's like, wow, like I really outgrew that. Even though getting into that job was what I really needed at the time and nourished me. And then I changed and outgrew and had to do something different. And I would agree with the life coach training. I remember doing life coach training and feeling so nourished by it because it was one of the first times that I went all in. So this is like my transition from cubicle job to what I'm doing now. The life coach training was where I went all in with all the stuff I love. Because with the training we took, the Martha Beck life coach training, there was a lot in it about like magical things and intuition. She had such a beautiful boundaried style of teaching life coaching, like, and it was in depth and it was months long process. Like if so, it was really nourishing to just go like head first all in into something that completely nourished me because it was what my true self loved so much and what I had been getting almost nothing of prior.
I felt really similarly. It was like, oh my gosh, like there's all these different parts of me that can show up in one space, like this spiritual, this kind of like quirky, this practical, down to earth. Like I'm like, oh my gosh, like all these things can actually coalesce into like a job. Yeah. I was like, this is the coolest thing. Like it was very freeing to be able to see and see like beautiful examples of how that type of like realities people like me can exist in the world. It was very affirming.
And I think that is a nice thing to think about with the wandering, because especially like a training is this in-between zone. You're not actually on the other side in the new career yet, you know? So I feel like a training is a great example of a wandering kind of thing where you're still kind of looking for the next thing. You're still, you know, in the orchard. You're not yet married to the king. You're not the queen yet. You know, you're like just being a little bit nourished by this thing. So it's this kind of fun in-between spot. Okay, so now I'm wondering, do you have a quote from this section for us?
I actually do have a quote that I think just perfectly speaks to what we've been talking about these kind of internal tugs and knowing that we have, even when we feel like we don't know what we're doing, which, you know, spoiler alert, I don't know that any of us will 100% know what we're doing all the time. And so sometimes it's getting comfy with that fact of life. And the quote is, "The tale resurrects the memory of a very old promise. The promise is that the descent will nourish even though it is dark. even though one feels one has lost one's way. Even in the midst of not knowing, not seeing, wandering blind, there is a something, an inordinately present someone who keeps pace. We go left, it goes left. We go right, it follows close behind, bearing us, making a way for us. Yeah, so that's what I love about this is, you know, I think part of that initiation is following that, those tugs and that wandering. And of course, like being multi-passionate, this really resonates with me because I don't know that I'm ever going to stop completely wandering. I'm always kind of finding my way. And part of it is just like it's a beautiful part of my life. And, you know, there's times where it feels really stressful and scary. And then other times it kind of feels fun. Like, I don't know where this is going to take me. And I'm excited by like what can happen on the other end.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is fun when you're leaving something that no longer works for you. And it can be terrifying not knowing what's going to happen, but it's still better than how it was before. That's how I always feel. Like, this is still better, right?
Exactly. And it's like, and I think what you're saying, like, sometimes there's things that they work for a time. They're great for a time. I mean, I'm going through that right now. Like, and it's like, okay, I don't need this anymore. And like, it's hard and it's scary, but it's like, it opens up to the next thing.
Yes. Yeah. So I think one reflecting question I would offer to our listeners for the wandering would be, I think if you are finding yourself in this situation currently, like presently, the question would be, so what is your pair? Like, what would really nourish your wild self? And if you don't know, the suggestion would be to do some trial and error, to try things out and just see, oh, does that feel good? You know, you don't have to do the bargain without knowing. You don't have to jump all in necessarily to something without knowing. You can try things out in little tastes.
I love that.
Yeah. What would you offer for a reflection question?
My question would be, what is it that you have outgrown? And, you know, it can be something tangible, but it can also be sometimes like you've outgrown like an old way of seeing yourself. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I, you know, see myself in this new way and I'm going to drop this old story. It could be a space. It could be, you know, even something that's, you know, an object in your life. Have you outgrown something that it's time to, you know, let it go?
Yeah, I love that. That is such a good question. Just what have you outgrown? And yeah, just remember to have courage. So this is where that endurance thing comes in, especially into the wandering part. It's like, remember that there's this whole rest of the story that we're going to talk about. And actually, as I was reading the synopsis, what was coming to me was that story could have ended when the devil walked away. Right? Like at the beginning where the devil tries to get her three times and can't, and he quits. That easily could have been the end of that story. And I thought it was interesting reading, thinking, oh no, we go on. Like this story keeps going. There's a whole other part of it. It doesn't just happen at the parents' house and that's it, right? Like there's this whole other long journey that happens for her. And so I just want to make sure everyone remembers the hope of the next step, that there's more coming, that there are other interesting places to go in life, and that our wild selves really can take us there to those interesting places.
Yeah, I absolutely resonate with that. And it's such a good reminder. And I feel like all of these, you know, three steps have really all come back to knowing yourself, is that deepening the knowing, deepening the understanding of who we are. And that's like, that's this part of the journey.
Yeah, it really is. The other thing that's coming to me too about the story is
like along these same lines, like that story could have ended with the father getting to keep his daughter, right? Like he was kind of the main character at first, but no, this story is about the daughter going on her journey. And so I really do think it is like you're saying, just getting to know yourself and also claim yourself.
Yes.
Like, this is me. Too bad.
Yeah.
This is well, who I am.
Exactly. And that she made such a conscious choice to like reject what was just being handed to her, something that she didn't even want, something that she didn't choose. And she's like, no, I'm choosing my own path.
Yeah, that's it. This is like choosing your own path. And that kind of statement gets said a lot in, I think, the self-help world, but it is like deep stuff. Like choosing your own path is like potent and powerful, and there's all this like cool stuff that goes on underneath. Okay, so that is part one of The Handless Maiden. And next episode, we will be doing part two, where we will continue the story and continue walking through these stages. And so as always, we invite you to come to our Facebook group. Let us know the times you have been through these things. Let us know where Handless Maiden really resonates for you. Our Facebook group is called Full Heart Free Voice Podcast Community. And also, we love reading your reviews, and we read them and look at them and think about them. They really help Caitlin and I to keep going, right? If we're talking about endurance, hearing from you and what you have gotten out of the podcast is a huge uplifting energy boost for us to keep going. Let us know what you think, and let us know what you have been learning from the podcast. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emma Veritas and Caitlin Bosshart. You can find out more about me, Emma, at my website, wildauthenticity.com, where you can also download your free workbook, 3 Habits to Calm Your Fear and Get You Writing.
And you can find out more about me, Caitlin, at my website, caitlinbosshart.com, and on Instagram at caitlin_bosshart. The nicest thing that you can do for us is to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player.
To stay connected with us, join the conversation in our Facebook group, follow along with us on Instagram, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. You'll find all the links in our show notes.
A special thank you to the amazing artists whose music is featured in our podcast, Wally Ingram, Stevie Black, and Tom Freund. You heard portions of their tracks, Shine a Light and Who Do You Love, from their record Spa Day.
And thanks to Caitlin Bosshart for creating our beautiful cover art. And thank you to Kirit Basu for all his audio and technical help.
And a huge thank you to Emma Veritas for her editing magic. Last but not least, thank you to you, our listeners.